There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus. Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riismandel, and I'm your host on today's program, Redefining Media, Media Democracy and Community Radio. It's the title of a conference coming up to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Community Radio CKUT in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And I'll be joined by Gretchen King, who works with their community news division, to tell me more about this great station and this great conference. You will want to stay tuned. Well, I should have Gretchen on the line here with me.
Hello, Paul.
Maybe you can start off by telling me a little bit about this great conference coming up, Redefining Media.
Well, it's happening for a lot of different reasons, but mostly because of Media Democracy Day, which is on October the 18th here in Canada. It's been a tradition for several years now to talk about media, and particularly democratizing the media, whether it be radio, television, or print. And CKUT happens to also have a 20th anniversary coming up this year in November. And so in order to celebrate that, but also to honor Media Democracy Day, as well as hold an event in the community that brings the two things together, we've put on this conference, which is going to be 3 days starting this coming Friday through Saturday and Sunday.
So we hear, I think, a lot about democracy, both north and south of the border, and often it's applied towards media. And we hear a lot of, I think, PR about how, well, the media continues to get more democratic because there's the internet. And, you know, it seems like there's all these more channels to represent so many more interests. What's the take of this conference? What's the point of having it and addressing specifically the issue of democracy in media?
Well, I think this conference is, first of all, primarily focusing on radio. And so it's looking specifically at community radio and all of the different aspects of community radio. So looking at people's involvement in its history and its creation and its existence. And that's primarily going to be happening through one of the streams throughout the weekend's workshop. Whereas the second stream in one of the series of workshops that are happening is a discussion of representation. And that in and of itself is and should be an ongoing question in sort of democratic discussion or discussions about democracy is talking about representation. And so that's going to be taking place in the forms of discussions about and by youth talking about their representation on the radio and how they approach it. There's another panel on women in community radio. There's another on Indigenous radio. There's one taking up the issue of anti-oppression and the intersections between anti-oppression and community radio. And so there are people specifically from prison radio initiatives who will be speaking there, as well as other. So those are the ways in which we're approaching this discussion of democracy and understanding the intersections of media and democracy, specifically through the workshop, but also the keynote presenter is Amy Goodman, who is the producer and host of Democracy Now!, and that program in and of itself, I'm sure your listeners are familiar with its foundations and human rights and its foundations and advocacy journalism and a kind of journalism that's shaping our world tomorrow in the past in pursuit of justice and very much monitoring social movements and what's happening at the community level. And that work at Democracy Now! Has been going on for 10 years, and you can see through its audience and the kind of growth that it's achieved in just 10 years of existence, it's now gone to television. It's got more than a million viewers just on television and probably millions more on radio worldwide. And it's not only inspired numbers in terms of an audience, but it's educated and enlightened a whole mass of people. And you can kind of see the work that they, as an organization, Democracy Now!, have engaged in over time, even producing 2 hours of news and frontline coverage on a daily basis, depending on the state of war at that time in the world. And for a while there, they didn't even leave their studios during 9/11 and the aftermath of that. So that kind of dedication Amy Goodman will be bringing to the conference and her own pursuit of hosting and producing Democracy Now! Over the years. And so I think the intersections between media and Democracy Now! Will be very clear for the audience that we expect to turn out for Amy Goodman, and we're hoping that some 600 people will show up for that and attend that conference.
So a lot of these sessions are about representation, as you mentioned, and in these discussions, are these academic in nature, or are these more hands-on how-tos, looking at ways in which various communities, say indigenous people, can be represented better or actually be involved in radio?
Well, it's a little of all three, right? Like, some of the panels have people who are representing the government aspects, like the CRTC, which is basically your equivalent of the FCC, the Regulations Commission in Canada that oversees radio, will be coming and participating on one of the panels to talk about the relationship between community radio and the CRTC, because obviously we wouldn't exist without their licensing us. But then there's also very much hands-on workshops that have nothing to do with official licenses, like building a low-power 1-watt transmitter. And CKUT hopes to be able to use this in our work as a local community radio station. You know, we're allowed in Canada to do some very low-watt broadcasting because we are a license holder. We can also do very low-watt local broadcasting, and so we want to use this 1-watt transmitter as a way to do community broadcasting, where we set up a remote studio, set up the 1-watt transmitter, and then send a low-power signal back to our studio and then broadcast it on the larger FM dial. We do a similar thing already, but usually through internet streaming.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be more useful in locations where there is no access to the internet, like a hard line to the internet.
Well, that's really interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So these are the kinds of things that we will be bringing to the conference, and participants will have not only a chance to hear about it and to discuss it, but also a chance to work on it with their hands and help us in our work by building something like this 1-watt transmitter. But in general, we do want all of the discussions to be building CKUT and strengthening CKUT, because, again, we're 20 years old. We've hit young adulthood. And we've gotten a little bit more reflective, and so we're sort of seeking to engage those around us and those who care about community radio to come to the series of workshops, come to the keynote presentation, and participate over the 3 days for what people have time for. We'll be having food in the morning and serving lunch. And then there's also evening activities. There's a dance night on Saturday, and there's also a film screening with food and drinks as well on Sunday evening. But we want people to come and participate and help answer that question of what is media democracy. And pretty much every workshop is going to make a space for not only presentations, but discussions, question and answer, and then even time for reflection and looking at what we're doing and how we could do it better.
And what is, say, your hope for the conference? You're participating in sessions, correct?
Yeah, I'm going to be giving a couple of workshops, one on direct action radio, and that one would be more of an exchange, like a discussion on types of direct action radio and what we can consider as direct action radio and the possibilities of it, say, locally or in the future in Montreal or Canada.
What do you consider direct action radio to be?
Well, the two examples that I'll be giving are, one is the Home Assist Marathon, which mm-hmm. you're again, your listeners will be familiar with, where literally you have hundreds of homeless people and their advocates who take to the airwaves overnight for, I think it happens for 12 hours in the States.
I think so.
Generally around sunset to sunrise, usually in the middle of winter, from some different location. And that in and of itself is a huge undertaking. And most of the people involved are doing it out of some sort of belief that homeless people and poor people have a right to access the airwaves. And they're making it happen in this en masse way to sort of show the need for this to happen and to address their concerns. So it's very much a valid example of direct action radio. The other example I'll be giving is sort of a synopsis of what CQC's activities were during the recent summit in Montebello, Quebec, where your president, George Bush, and Felipe Calderon of Mexico and Harper, Stephen Harper of Canada, got together and pushed further on the people, the security and prosperity partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And there, of course, were well over 1,000 people who had attended to try to have a say or get to the table. And they were, of course, blocked by masses and masses of police. But CKUT was there, and we were broadcasting and producing reports, different length reports and sending them out to different stations, as well as doing live coverage of the events as they were happening on CKUT from Montebello, as well as other stations, not just in Canada, but across North America. And sort of talking about how that came together in probably less than 30 days, you know? But that would be like a second example of direct action radio. Another workshop that I'll be giving is on digital editing and giving people a very thorough overview of editing using digital audio software. So that would be an example of the kind of hands-on training that people can have access to. And it's open to the general public. You don't have to be a CQC member to participate in this kind of stuff. And I think that's one of the greatest things about this weekend's activities is normally, you know, if you want to come and get involved at CQC, there's a process. There's a general orientation, and, you know, you do your library orientation, you get your membership, and so on and so forth. And this is just sort of a big open door to come and not only find out what it's all about, but actually walk home with some skills as well.
That sounds great. I'm talking to Gretchen King. She is with CKUT Community Radio in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. She's part of the Community News Collective there. And we've been discussing Redefining Media, Media Democracy and Community Radio Conference, which is happening on Media Democracy Day, or in celebration of Media Democracy Day, both north of the border and south, and as part of CKUT's 20th anniversary being on the air. Well, let's talk a little bit then about CKUT. Oh, by the way, that conference is happening October 19th through 21st there at McGill University, where CKUT is located. So let's talk a little bit about the station. And what's unique is you work with the news department, and you call it a community news department.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very important part of your name, the community part, correct?
Yeah. I think that we can't talk about news at CKUT without mentioning and discussing the community for a lot of different reasons, and that's why we sort of, you know, redefined and made it a term that accurately describes the work that we're doing, and it is community news production. And that's because we have people who are producing who obviously come from the community, and so they come and they represent the issues of their concerns. And they're often held accountable to people in their community for how they're representing things. Or if we're not there to document something, people will sometimes call us up and say, hey, why weren't you there? And then if we're there documenting something, people very much appreciate our participation in sort of documenting the collective memory in a way that it won't be forgotten, i.e., turning it into radio and passing out a few CDs that the next time we see the event organizers or are distributing them through our radio station. And that's sort of the ongoing work that we're doing. And another aspect of that is also trying to find more and more ways that we can be involved as a news department in the community. Yes, there's the 5 to 6 news show that we air every day, and we have done so for more than 12 years. community news program that has come on every day at 5 o'clock, representing different issues in the community, from the community perspective, following different social movements happening locally. There's a community event, having the event organizers come on before or after, going to the event, recording it, making radio about things very much happening locally, or even revisiting things that have happened historically, but representing them for the community, by the community, and so on. But we're also, like I said, looking for more and more opportunities to go into the community and actually have activities. For example, we're currently working out a new proposal to go back into Salaru, which is the largest youth shelter in Canada, servicing both boys and girls and their pets. It's a very unique facility in that sense that it's not segregated by gender and people are allowed to come in with their animals. They even have a free vet clinic once a month, and there's all sorts of activities there. And they very much focus on empowerment, not just dealing with the crisis and the need of housing and the lack of rights and so on. And so we had produced in the past radio from the cafeteria there, and we will produce in the future. And there's always the big goals of, oh, can we get a portable radio connection for the Native Friendship Center's youth council so that they can host our Native Solidarity News program live from the Friendship Center, which is serving Aboriginal, largely an Aboriginal homeless population, but the Aboriginal population of Montreal and the surrounding area is serving the urban community in Montreal in its downtown core. But that big dream of can we get a live broadcasting situation there is, you know, becoming an actual project now. We're writing grants, we're putting together proposals. But those are sort of bigger projects that are always ongoing. But even this panel, workshop, presentations, all parties happening as part of the media conference, is largely getting a lot of support from the news department and from the Community News Collective. A lot of our volunteers are very much looking forward to participating in the conference. But also helping out with the conference as well, because it's part of our mandate to do events like this on campus and in the community, addressing critical issues, not just of media democracy. A couple months ago, we were hosting panel discussions at McGill on racial profiling, and as part of that series of presentations that we organized, we turned them into radio, and we also organized a youth workshop on knowing your rights for youth who are often profiled by the Montreal Police Department. We organized that a lawyer come in, talk with them about their rights, recorded that session, which was some 2.5 hours, and reduced it down into an hour of radio so that youth who weren't physically there could also benefit from that discussion. So all of these examples are sort of you know, ways in which we see ourselves defined as a community news department. But I guess it sort of begins with the issues of representation, but then those issues of representation turn into where are we presenting those representations. And so we often want to take it off the radio because that only reaches so many people and bring it to the public into different community spaces, whether it's a youth shelter, a Native Friendship Center, our university campus, or some other public space.
That sounds great, especially the fact that you're on the ground and involving the community. It's not just simply professional journalists coming in to report on what's going, but it sounds like you're involving people themselves from many different communities in and around the Quebec area, which is a large, very large, diverse city. For people who don't live in Montreal, where can people learn more about CKUT? Can you listen online?
CKUT is very much a presence online. All of our broadcasting is archived online for 2 months. All of our information about the media conference is there and will be available there for download as well. CKUT's website is www.ckut.ca.
Great. And the conference is happening October 19th through 21st?
Yep. This coming weekend. And like I said, it's free. It's open to the public. And one of the primary goals is Skillshare, and that's one of CKUT's goals on a daily basis. So I hope everybody comes out and is able to participate in that way.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Gretchen, for telling me about this event. I wish you great luck with it and, of course, continued good work up there with CKUT.
Thank you very much.
And this is Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. You can check out Media Geek online at www.mediageek.net, where you will find the Media Geek blog, and you can find out more about a lot of the things we cover here on the show, as well as other opinions and ideas that I simply don't have time for in 30 minutes. And the radio show is at radio.mediageek.net, where you can download it or subscribe to the podcast. You can get it on your computer or MP3 player, all at mediageek.net. If you have any comments, send them to me, paul@mediageek.net. Now we're going to take a look at a little bit of news from our media environment. Even though the FCC recently fined Comcast Cable for airing fake news, VNRs, on its local cable news programs, the tide of fake news is still rolling in. That's according to a new report released by the Center for Media and Democracy. VNRs are sponsored news segments produced by PR agencies, which are designed to look and sound like genuine news reports. They're especially attractive to local TV news outlets because producing news segments is expensive, and VNRs are provided by for free. In its October 11th report, the CMD says that Traverse City, Michigan station WGTU-TV-29 aired three VNRs over the past 6 weeks, including an entire prepackaged VNR funded by the financial company Capital One. FCC rules require that a station identify the source of a VNR if it is political, deals with important issues, or dwells inordinately on a brand. The VNR from Capital One that aired on WGTU really does qualify as one that dwells on a particular brand. This is the CMD's third report on VNRs, all of which also have been filed with the FCC. CMD's first two reports cited incidents of VNRs airing at 111 stations and contributed to the FCC's fining Comcast for its cable channel CNA for airing multiple VNRs without disclosure. In August 2006, the FCC launched an investigation into 77 of the stations named in CMD's first report on VNRs. So far, the commission has only taken action against Comcast, and the status of the other investigations is unknown. CMD released this third report in order to remind the FCC that the practice of airing unattributed fake news continues, despite the negative publicity and the fine against Comcast. CMD has joined the media reform group Free Press in urging the FCC to strengthen and clarify VNR requirements, including requiring a visual identification of a VNR source on display throughout the report and requiring broadcasters to keep a monthly report of their VNR usage in their public file. You can learn more about fake news VNRs and watch examples of them at the CMD's website at prwatch.org. On October 11th, three out of five FCC commissioners blew a wet kiss to AT&T when they voted to lift some regulations on the company's broadband business. The commission partially granted AT&T's request for a relaxation on the rules that govern how much it can charge business customers and competitors for access to some high-speed internet lines. In particular, the decision eliminates the requirement that AT&T file a report with the FCC about the rates it charges, reducing the commission's ability to have any oversight over them. The two Democratic commissioners voted against the changes. In a joint statement, Commissioners Jonathan Adelstein and Michael Copps remarked that the commission did not have sufficient data to even make this decision. They furthermore criticized their fellow commissioners for claiming that, quote, potential competition is sufficient to protect consumers, end quote. And that's potential, not actual competition. And they also conclude that these changes, quote, can make the problem worse as potential competitors will have even less ability to successfully compete and provide a check on any anti-competitive behavior, end quote. But AT&T hasn't just been busy getting an anti-competitive gift from the FCC. The nation's largest telephone company has also been revealed to be taking aim at its customers' free speech rights. The company joins number two Verizon in putting language into their broadband service contracts, stipulating that they can cut off internet service for any behavior that AT&T or Verizon believe might harm their, quote, name or reputation, end quote, or even a reputation of their business partners like Yahoo. These restrictive stipulations came to light after AT&T sent notices to thousands of Bell South customers, who are now AT&T customers, revising their service contracts. A Verizon spokesman told the LA Times that the language in the agreement is in order to stop people from setting up websites that look like Verizon's or for setting up phishing scams targeting Verizon customers. However, Such illegal actions are already prohibited by other provisions of Verizon's service agreement, so it would seem that these terms targeting name or reputation are overkill. An AT&T spokesman also told the LA Times that the company had no plans to censor customers. However, many consumer and public interest groups, along with AT&T and Verizon customers, are questioning the sincerity of the company's assurances. At the end of September, Verizon was caught blocking text messages from the National Abortion Rights Action League. And in August, AT&T censored a live webcast of Pearl Jam just as lead singer Eddie Vedder started speaking critically of President Bush. Although Verizon made a quick turnaround and let the narrow text messages go, and AT&T quickly apologized for censoring Pearl Jam, both incidents serve as a reminder of the tremendous power of the nation's two largest telecom companies and what they have over our daily ability to communicate freely. Finally, I've been keeping tabs on the proposed merger of XM and Sirius Satellite Radio, and it seems like Wall Street is feeling pretty bullish on the deal. A financial analyst from Bear Stearns told a Satellite Investment Symposium that he believes the merger will be approved by both the FCC and the Justice Department within 30 to 45 days. Analysts think the deal will go through because they agree with XM and Sirius's position that satellite radio is different from satellite TV and that there is much more competition in the form of terrestrial radio, iPods, and internet radio. Opinion on the merger are mixed in the public interest community, mostly because XM and Sirius don't have large audiences, especially compared to satellite television, and there is some hope that there can be stipulations put on the merger to offer public access channels over satellite radio. Although when satellite radio was created as a service by the FCC, one of the main stipulations on creating that service was that there would be two competitors and they would not be allowed to merge later. Now, the biggest opponent to the merger is the National Association of Broadcasters, which represents the traditional broadcasting industry. On August 9th, the NAB asked the FCC to call time out on its 180-day shot clock for deciding on the XM Sirius deal. The NAB says it needs more time to go through the documents that it's receiving as a result of a Freedom of Information Act request it filed in March. The NAB also says it still hasn't received some documents from the FCC related to the FM radio transmitters used in satellite radio receivers. John Anderson from DIYmedia.net discussed this issue with me on the July 20th edition of the radio show. You can go find that archive at radio.mediageek.net. John pointed out that along with the Sirius and XM receivers having hot-rodded pirate FM transmitters, the NAB's FOIA request has also turned up documentation of the companies running hundreds of unlicensed transmitters to help repeat their satellite signals all over the country. And the NAB is pointing to this very clear documentation and admission of unlicensed activity as a very big reason why the Sirius XM satellite merger shouldn't go through. Of course, traditional radio broadcasters have a big old horse in that race, but the public probably does too. Keep you informed on that here on Media Geek as part of my ongoing effort to bring you headline news of our media environment, the news that often gets left off the front page and never gets considered as important to politics and democracy, always gets shunted to the business page. We put it up front here in Media Geek where we think it really does affect our right to communicate and receive good information freely. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at Radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, and Free Radio Olympia Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station, too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.